insane in a perfect situation. I let love down the drain. There's the pitch, slow and straight. All I have to do is swing and I'm a hero.
Hey there.
But I'm a zero.
This is Rich Outfield. And this is my little podcast called The Rich Outcast. And, I'm in the car. It's been a while since I made one of these. I stockpiled a ton. Between the months of February and April of 2016, I probably recorded 9 or 10 Rich Outcasts. No, I take that back. Because I did the Q&A ones around that time. And I think there were 11 or 12 of those that I recorded. Which doesn't mean that they were 11 or 12 episodes of the Rich Outcast. But they were 11 or 12 different recording sessions answering those questions. When you're hearing this, gosh, you're in a future. I hope the future is bright where you are. I don't have much to talk to you about today. I've done this before, where I've sat down and I know that I want to record. I know that I want to take advantage of the fact that I am in the car, and I will be for a few minutes, and I've told you before that having a podcast, especially this one, feels a little bit like free therapy. It's like I've come in, I've laid back on the couch, and the doctor says, "What would you like to talk about today?" Sometimes I would call my buddy back in LA, you know, just because I needed somebody to talk to. And he would say, "Tell me about your mother." He would do it all the time, and it was so irritating because he could tell that it's just like, hey, you know, something happened and I need to talk about it. And so he was aware of the free therapy that you get when you have a friend. Anyhow, there's two or three things that I could talk about. One of them is failure. There was an episode of That Gets My Goat that Big and I recorded. And about halfway through, I proclaimed, this episode will be called Abject Failure. Where we're talking about stumbling in our writing goals. And we never ran that. Of course, in the future where you are, that's already aired. But it sat for, well, at this point, it's been 10 months probably, so nearly a year since we recorded that one. But, yeah, abject failure is an interesting topic.
Tell me about your mother.
And, yeah, this can go a couple of different ways. First is me talking about my own failings, my own lack of success, my own stumbles. And I don't know if I dare. I've expressed before that sometimes because I'm in this intimate environment and I'm just speaking to myself, I say things that I shouldn't say in a podcast. And a few times I've left them in, but most times I go, I'm probably going to cut that part out. There was one recently I was editing where some guy pulled in front of me and then he slowed down. And I started screaming profanities at the guy. And I thought, do I want people to hear that? Ultimately, I cut it out and then just put it at the end. And I don't know if that was a wise decision or not. The cutting it out probably was wise, but the putting it at the end, I probably should have just deleted it. But I don't know. I remember being in LA, the traffic would be so shitty so often. And that you know, everybody always allocated extra time to get somewhere. You know, if you lived 15 minutes away from your destination, then you would set aside 25 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes, to get there. You know, if a movie was starting at 7, you'd probably leave at 6. But it was still so frustrating, so angering, when traffic would stop. And there was no reason for it. There was no accident. It was just too many people in a small place, or too many cars, or one... I can't even explain it. There would be, you know, these constant radio announcements telling about traffic conditions. And they had just made up a word when it wasn't construction, it wasn't an accident. There was just crappy traffic. And so, yeah, I would get really, really angry about things, especially when you had said, okay, the movie starts in 50 minutes. And it's just across town. I think we'll be able to make it. And you get in the car and you don't make it. Anyhow, sorry about that. I guess I was talking about things that I want to cut out, whether I should or shouldn't. But yeah, I there's more failure in my life this week. I've stumbled again. And I keep being reminded of that fact. It hits me all of a sudden, you know. I'll be driving, or I'll be going out to the mailbox, and all of a sudden it hits me, and I'll be like, wow, what am I going to do? Ugh. And it sucks because I have become complacent recently. And I knew a guy, he was like a motivational speaker kind of guy. He was one of those guys that would tell people to be their best selves. And he said, the thing I hate to hear most from the people around me is, I am comfortable. So there's nothing worse than when you are comfortable. People that are comfortable don't change their surroundings. People that are comfortable don't feel the need to make things better, to work harder, to change the path that they're on. And for a long time I was comfortable, and now I am uncomfortable again. And so you in the future may be in a world where I have made changes in my life and I'm in a better place. But right now it's hard to see that. And I do keep saying those words, what am I going to do? I guess my life has been pretty easy, because I don't say that a lot. But the answer to that question, what am I going to do, has to be keep going. Pick yourself up and keep going. There are always going to be challenges, new challenges, the same old challenges sometimes too, that will rear their ugly heads again, like a hydra that you cut the heads off of, and here it is again. Wow, 3 more heads? Really? Seriously? And the solution is just keep going, pushing through, keep getting up every morning, starting a new day, and facing your problems, facing your challenges. I'm reminded of when I was writing the sequel to Birth of a Sidekick. The first line was something along the lines of, things were looking good for Ben Parks. And then there was a paragraph about how, you know, he lived in this little town in Chueno, Arizona. He had gotten out from the orphanage, and now he had a school, and he had friends, and he had a family. And he was going to have a new adventure. But it started out with things were going his way. Things were going well for Benny Parks. And around that time, I went to a panel
where people were talking about writing series of novels. They were talking about, you know, episodic, you know, the series, where it's not just one and done, which I tend to write. And they were talking about the plight of the protagonist, and that there are always new hurdles that they'll have to jump through. And there are always new challenges and new things that will go wrong for that character, main character. And Dave Wolverton, who at that same panel I talked to and ended up sending us the story, Ship of Fools, that we ran on the Doonstief, he said, you give your main character a goal, and if he achieves it quickly, that's a short story. But if he finds obstacles in the way, and obstacles behind that, and obstacles behind that, then that is a novel. And he talked a little bit about, you know, just the struggles of these main characters and how we want them, we as readers, want them to be happy and to succeed. But it's the writer's job to come up with new impediments to them being happy, new stumbling blocks in their path, because that's where drama is. There's nothing more boring than a place where everybody is happy and there's no conflict. I remember my uncle, he had a birthday party for his daughter when she was about 5. And they put on this DVD of My Little Pony. And it wasn't My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, which you love. It was one from, you know, 8, 9, 10 years before that. And all it was a group of friends who got together and laughed and spent time with one another and shared and got along. And I couldn't believe how dull it was. It reminded me of, on The Simpsons, when Lisa would watch the Happy Little Elves. And it was just these elves that bounced around and were happy, and there was, you know, nothing was ever going on. It blew my mind that something like that could exist. But it wasn't made for me. That panel really spoke to me, because it made me think about this sequel that I was about to write, or I had just started writing, and that I had started with things were going pretty good for Banny Parks, that I was probably going to have to make things difficult for him. And I've talked about this before. When I was with Big, I ended up making things difficult for Ben, you know, just when he got settled down and he thought, hey, this is going all right. People in town took a dislike to him. The sheriff got in trouble with his wife about spending so much time with this kid, and so he broke off relations with Ben. And then the second the sheriff wasn't there to stick up for him, other people started picking on Ben. And I decided, you know, I established that he finally had some money and he had some independence. I've got to come up with a way to take away all of that money. And so, yeah, some bad things happened to Ben in that second story. At the time of this recording, I haven't started it, although I meant to just the other day. I went for this long bike ride and I started trying to come up with things that I wanted to happen in a third story. And I came up with 2, and they're really minor. I think what I need is a major mission or goal or challenge for Ben. And once I have that, that's sort of the spine, the backbone of this next story. And then I can sit down and write it. And I don't imagine that it'll be nearly as long as the second one was. But you never know. The second one was long enough, it could have been 2 stories. And I wonder if it would have been better being two. But, you know, what's done is done. Writing these adventures for a character, and it would probably be good if there were a couple of supporting characters that Ben connected with who became, you know, his team every time that he has an adventure kind of thing. So that, you know, something could happen to one of them instead of it always just being Ben. Or one of them could get in trouble. But I don't know. That hasn't happened yet. I have an idea I really like for like a fourth or fifth story, but it has to be... Oh, and I've already talked about this. I talked about sequels. But I have an idea that I like, but it would have to be an older Ben, like a 15-year-old, 16-year-old Ben. And so that one's on the back burner for now. Anyway, as far as my reading goes, I started reading a book series, the first book in a series. And it's the one that my mom talked about reading the interview with the writer where he said that they, at this point, the books just write themselves. And I think that part, is what inspired me to say, okay, I'm going to pick up this book and see what's up. Because yes, I would love to do a book series where the words just flow like that and the next idea comes and it's like, okay, all right, now I know what's going to happen in the next one. Most writers today seem to do this serialized thing or episodic thing, or, you know, it's just continuing adventures of characters. And I envy that. I like that idea of you flesh things out and you expand on things that you said the first time, and you explore places that you never mentioned in any of the other series, and these characters continue to grow and develop, and sometimes they surprise you, and sometimes you surprise yourself with what you do to these characters. That is really appealing to me. I also like the idea of the reader becoming emotionally invested in the characters, the reader caring what happens to not just the main character, but, you know, the supporting characters. And you can get some really powerful connection that way. With, as we said, you know, things going badly for your character, your characters, and seeing how they overcome it. The problem with this book is that I feel, and I felt it almost from the very beginning, that I was being talked down to. That this was a man who is intelligent, probably educated, and he was dumbing down what he was writing because it was intended for YA, the youth audience. And I mentioned that with Brandon Sanderson. It really, really bothered me, but does it have to be that way? Like, for example, Benny Parks is 11, right? In that first story. And he's going to get a little older if I continue to write these things. But if you have a 12-year-old protagonist, that doesn't necessarily make your book YA, right? And you've heard me bitch about YA a bunch of times. I made the mistake of going to this YA panel, I think with Big Anklevich, that same year as the Dave Wolverton thing, and they were talking about what is YA. And to my horror, I discovered that the answer is whatever I say it is, whatever the publisher says it is, whatever I think it is this week. And a woman had written a book about rape or molestation or sexual abuse, and it was a book for adults, and it was rough. And she had published it, or the publisher had published it, and that the years had gone by, and it was suddenly 2015, and the publisher contacted her and said, "We're going to republish your book, but this time as a YA novel." And she's like, oh my gosh, okay, who's going to do all this? And she's like, what do you mean? It's like, who's going to do all the changes to make it a YA novel, and the publisher said, oh, no, no, we're just going to put a different cover on it and market it toward whoever reads YA. I almost said kids, but I don't know who reads YA. And I was horrified by that discovery, because that reminded me, as I've said here, that I don't know what YA is. All I know is, you remember the old legal question of what is obscenity? You know, there was obscenity laws, and there are certain things that you weren't allowed to sell because it violated obscenity laws. So the famous question was asked, what is obscenity? And the even more famous answer was, I don't know, but I know it when I see it. And I think that that's the case with YA for me, for Rish Outfield. I can't tell you what YA is. But this book that I'm reading right now, I know it when I see it. People don't talk in a normal way like human beings talk. They talk in the way that I wrote things when I was 13 or 14, and I didn't want to get in trouble if my parents found what I was reading. I remember being 17 in Miss Bigler's class, and I was writing something, and it had the F word in it. And I don't know how long Bigler had been looking over my shoulder, or if she just, you know, if Satan whispered in her ear and she stepped over. And just as I had written that thing, she said, let me see that. And of course I didn't want her to see it. It wasn't for her. Heck, you know, I didn't want my parents to see it. But both the principal, the vice principal, and my parents ended up seeing that because of Miss Bigler. And yeah, had it been in the back of my mind that my parents might have discovered it, the language would have been very, very different. But there's a difference between writing naturally and then censoring language. And I understand that, you know, maybe your upbringing is different, or your line in the sand is different, and you would never use profanity. But that doesn't mean that you wouldn't express yourself with words that have a harsher, heavier meaning. You know, gosh, it's so hard to explain. It's like saying, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. I can't say what it is, but I know it when I see it. My niece and nephew were watching the Blair Witch Project this week. It was yesterday, I think. And my niece, Lexi, asked me, have you ever seen the Blair Witch Project? And of course I had. And she said, you know, oh, I hear it's the scariest. My mom told me not to ever see it. And I said, I personally don't think it's scary at all. But, you know, go right ahead and watch it. And then come tell me what you thought. And so she was in the other room watching it. And the level of profanity, the amount of profanity in Blair Witch Project put Tarantino to shame, but it was stupid person profanity. It was like, I fucking told you, we're fucking lost with the fucking map. What the fuck is it? Fuck, what are we gonna fucking do? Fuck. Now, hopefully, if I did my job, I bleeped all those. Language is an art. Language is a tapestry. And you can smear excrement all over that tapestry if you choose to. But, you know, I'd rather you didn't. Yeah, and another little aside, she came to me afterward, and I said, well? And she's like, oh, what a waste of time. That people thought that that was scary. And see, that's the interesting thing, is it's 2016, and I thought after she said that, and yeah, she was just disgusted with the movie. And, you know, I understand that completely, because that's how I feel about it. But I've always tried to be respectful of the people who thought it was the scariest movie ever, because, you know, what scares me might not scare you, etc. And in fact, I interviewed Daniel Myrick, who was the co-director of that movie, one of the two directors,
And I tried to tiptoe around that fact that I didn't find it scary or even remotely well done, to just ask him, you know, what is it that people...
Tell me about your mother. Tell me about your mother. Tell me about...
What is it that people say to you? You know, what is it that scared them about that movie? And yeah, he uses the example of what you don't see is scarier than anything that you do see. You know, what you create in your mind. And yeah, this is the perfect example of that. Because, it, yeah, if anybody got any fear out of the Blair Witch Project, and Stephen King did. He wrote about it in his expanded Dance Macabre, which came out a couple years ago. And he wrote more about Blair Witch Project than any other movie post-1980. And I can't criticize the man because, you know, he's sort of my hero. Anyhow, I thought that it would be interesting to go on to the IMDb and see what people in 2016 were saying about Blair Witch Project.
Because Blair Witch Project, in many ways, is like The Exorcist was when I was a kid. And I don't know if I've mentioned that, but yeah, that was the big scary movie that everybody had seen and would talk about. And so don't ever see The Exorcist, you know. The difference is, I don't think religious leaders ever said, don't ever see Blair Witch Project. And so I had certain expectations when I finally saw The Exorcist. And all of the twists or shockingest moments or whatever were spoiled for me. I already knew they were coming. Anywho, I just remembered what that was like when people were like, Exorcist isn't so scary or whatever. And so I looked on the IMDb and I went to their message boards, and I have mentioned in the past that that's a mistake, that you shouldn't do that, because the internet is a wasteland where people just spout off and say horrible, horrible things to get a rise out of other people. And the IMDb message boards were a cesspool in that wasteland. And so I used to always say that, you know, it's just the people were real, real, real idiots on the IMDb message boards until this thing called YouTube was invented. And then the septic tank that caught the worst parts from the cesspool was created, which was the YouTube comment section. Because you have to at least speak English to go to the message board of the IMDb page for a movie. YouTube, nope. So people don't even, they can't even type, and they feel entitled to express their views on YouTube. But I digress. What I found, was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday, on the IMDb page for Blair Witch Project was about 20% of the commenters were like me, or worse than me, saying, how can anybody find this scary? 1999 was ancient history, and the world has progressed so much since then. I cannot imagine anybody ever finding this movie anything but boring. But the vast majority of comments, 60 to 75%, were, this movie still holds up. The scariest movie ever made. More relevant now than it was in 1999. This is the movie that started the found footage phenomenon that we know today, and rightly so. They've never been as good as this one. So terrifying. I get chills just typing this. It was kind of the opposite of the usual brainless Cro-Magnon thumpings that you find on message boards, on the IMDb message boards, where it's like, if you like movie this, you are gay. It was people trying to express why it was scary to them, why the movie worked, why
The things that you don't see are more terrifying than the things that you do see. And, you know, I find that hard to argue with. You know what I mean? In the same way that somebody says, you know, I think Scarlett Johansson is the most beautiful woman on the face of the earth. I'll be like, yeah, she's pretty. But it's like, no, the most beautiful woman on the face of the earth. And then they give their reasons. When people have reasons rather than just, I find it difficult to argue with. There's nothing wrong with Scarlett Johansson. Don't get me wrong. Although, I was going to say there's nothing wrong with Scarlett Johansson, but they keep casting her in voice roles, voiceover roles, and her voice has to be the least sexy thing about her, no? Anyway, sorry. The point I was trying to make is if somebody said, this is why Scarlett Johansson is the most beautiful woman on the earth, and I like this about her, and I think this is so sexy, and I think these are great, and, you know, et cetera. That, we're dealing with perception here. We're dealing with people's feelings here. We're dealing with biology, too. And how do I argue with that? So the terror that people felt seeing these three bickering over loud young people lost in the woods, you know, what is that? What is that shadow? Where did this come from? How can we be lost? Where's the map? All of that stuff that I heard through the door yesterday. I was trying to edit podcasts, and I just, the loudness of that, it was just yelling for 90 minutes or 80 minutes or however long it was. It was still not as bad as when my niece turned off Blair Witch Project, and she was watching these reality shows on VH1. Those are much, much, much worse. Although they do bleep the profanity in those. I'm digressing. The paintings that your mind creates when you hear a sound or see a shadow, see something in the corner of your eye, are terrifying or beautiful or whatever it might be. Remember when I talked about, I did the episode that was the cemetery tale, right? And I talked about us going up to the canyon and telling ghost stories. And I became convinced that if I looked out the window of the car, there would be a face looking in at me. I became convinced of it. And I freaked out, and the others sort of had to talk me down. And that's the power of the mind. The way that the brain has of making connections and filling in possibilities. And I can understand somebody hearing a sound in the woods and... It's so hard for me to defend Blair Witch Project because it sucks. I mean, holy cow, it sucks. When that movie came out in 1999, I wrote a review of it. And I still remember what I said in the review because it's as true in 2016 as it was then. Imagine you went to see Jaws. And the movie started, went through, and ended. And you never once saw the shark. Ever. That would be Blair Witch Project. Oh, and if you gave the camera to somebody with end-stage Parkinson's disease. Now, I'm sorry, guys. That's probably cruel of me to say. It's just not my cup of tea. Guys, there's so many movies that I consider scary that maybe you think suck. But at least those have a serial killer in them or a ghost or a creepy child or, you know... something. All of that was started from me talking about the non-use of profanity in the book I'm reading, or... We talked about that, though, right? In the Schlantz episode. There are ways that people talk. We have certain words that we've given power, that we've given shock value to. They're useful. You know, words that are for use in emergency kind of thing. You know, they're kept under glass because we have decided that they have power. And then, because of polite society or because of religion or because of conservative values, we have come up with euphemisms for those words that are acceptable. For example, saying the F word. For example, saying freak or frig or flippin'. You know what I mean? These are substitutes that were invented to, I don't know. It's hard to even figure out where those come from. I was one of those people as a teenager that would say freaking all the time. He was freaking there, and the freaking best movie, and freak, I love this song. Because I was around a lot of people that would be upset if I said it was fucking there. Do you know what I'm saying? And of course, you could always say, I freaking love this song in front of your mom, and she would not be upset. But in situations of actual danger and stress and argument and drama, the phony swear words tend to drop away because the blocks that you've put on your mind of I don't use these words, they go away. Those blocks are dropped in real high tension, danger, life or death, emergency situations. And I've said this sort of thing before, and I don't want people to interpret it as, you know, you have to use the F word, otherwise there's not real drama there. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is you can't use a phony substitute like schlants in real drama because people don't. What you can do is just omit the profane word altogether. In a time when you'd shake somebody and say, I am not fucking joking around. If you don't want an R rating, if you're trying to sell your story to a fudging 14-year-old girl with glasses and braces and a what would Jesus do necklace, then you just cut the F word and you say, I am not joking around. You get the same sentiment across. It's when people so inexpertly stick to the substitute words, or worse, the may make up their own, that you draw attention to it. Nobody ever notices that you cut the fuck out of shut the fuck up when you just change it to shut up. Because people say shut up. Do you know what I'm saying? But nobody ever in a situation with real consequences says shut the flip up. Nobody. And again, you can argue. You can say, oh, well, my Uncle Jesse, he always said shut the flip up. Not if the fire and brimstone started raining down. And if you disagree, just shut this off. Don't ever listen to my podcast again. Because you and I cannot agree to disagree. So in the same way that somehow I am able to listen to somebody say why Blair Witch Project is so terrifying, even though I want to roll my eyes because it isn't, you need to be able to understand that I know what I'm talking about. Okay, or that I think I know what I'm talking about. I have gone off the rails, kids, on a crazy train. Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to this episode. I recognize that I probably didn't get the message across that I started out with, which was, listen, life is difficult. And there are times when you're going to fall. Sometimes fall flat on your face. Sometimes just fall onto one knee. It happens to everybody. But not everybody gets back up, brushes themselves off. Some people can fall flat on their face and it hurts. You know, they hit their nose just right there on the ball, and their eyes are watering. It just stings so much, and they can laugh at it. They laugh at themselves, and that's a great accomplishment. I'm not usually like that. I think I told you in the Comedy is Hard episode that I tore the seat out of my pants one time in public. I just ripped right there the drawers right off. And I was mortified. And the dude I was with thought it was the funniest thing ever. And yeah, for a moment there, I wanted to murder this guy. I wanted to punch him in the fudgin nose. And hey, did you hear what I said there? I said fudgin. But at the time, I would not have said fudgin. I wanted to beat him up. I wanted to kill him. I was so angry. And then I stopped. And I thought about it. And if I had seen somebody else rip the butt out of their pants, you'd think it was on a cartoon. It was in one of the John Hughes written movies that he wrote at the end of his life, when it was always Baby's Day Out and Home Alone clones and crap like that. And I laughed. I chose to laugh, and I said to the guy, I guess I can see why that would be funny. I didn't feel it. It wasn't a real laugh, but I chose to. And listen, sometimes you screw up, and sometimes life screws you over. And if you're really tough, you can laugh. I mean, you're out there in the future. The problems that have been going on in my life this week are in the past to you. And boy, it would be great if, when I get to where you are now, I could laugh. I could laugh about all this. I think that eventually it's not going to hurt. In the same way that, yeah, I fell on my face. Dang, it hurts so bad. I've got, you know, blood right there on the gums in between my teeth and my upper lip. But that pain goes away. The blood stops remarkably fast. And you got to go on. You've got to forge on. And the thing that sucks is that there's going to be another loose rock or slippery log or, I don't know, patch of asphalt with a crack in it that you're going to slip on up ahead. And you've just got to somehow convince yourself to keep going, to get up again. And even if you know you're going to fall again, keep trying. I made some mistakes in the past that really hurt me. I think about them all the time. And I always think about going back there and zigging when I actually zagged, or talking to myself and saying, hey, don't do what I did. Do something else. And I'm sure that I will look back on this right now and have that feeling for a long time to come. It would be cool if, in the same way that I sometimes think, you know, if I hadn't screwed up and had to come away from LA and put my dreams aside, then, you know, I would never have discovered podcasting, and podcasting led to self-publishing, and self-publishing led to audiobook narration, and who knows what audiobook narration could lead to. I need to do more of it. I've thought of that before. I think about, you know, the mistakes that I made, the failures that I had stacked up in California that sent me packing. In some ways were good, and you never know. Right now sucks, but there might be good down the line that I can trace right back to now. Let's hope. It's a weird episode, guys. I'm sorry. I don't know how Blair Witch Project and Ben Parks and me screwing up my life all worked together, but they did. It's cool to have this outlet and to be able to talk and say things. And I know at least one person listens to my podcast. Sometimes I'll get emails. Sometimes there'll be comments on the podcast. You can always comment, you know, on the blog, whatever it is. I dig that. I dig that somebody's listening, that somebody cares. And it would be neat to know that for every person that does comment, there are 5 or 10 people that don't, that still like hearing me talk. They just don't feel the need to comment on it. In the same way that when I would listen to talk radio, there would always be the people that would say, long time listener, first time caller, which sucks because it means nothing. It's one of those things where you say it enough, like looking at the word blueberry. You look at it long enough and blue doesn't look right, and suddenly berry doesn't look right, and you're like, what? This has been misspelled the whole time? That's what log type list fs type gala means. But yeah, there were all these people that listened every week or every day and never felt the need to call in on the talk show or whatever it is. And so yeah, with this podcast, I like to think that there are people out there who've listened to it and who feel like they know me. And heck, maybe they like me, even if I didn't like Blair Witch Project. Oh, heck, I'm going to alienate even more of you. Book of Shadows Blair Witch 2 is better than the Blair Witch Project. Brah, brah, brah. You know, I had to talk more about horror movies on this show. I don't do it a lot. Sadly, I don't see them a lot. But I could. They're still my first love. Well, anyhow, we have reached the end of another Rish Outcast, another rambling, incoherent, semi-profane, depending on how bleepy I did it, Rish Outcast. And, you know, I think if Sir Fake Sean Connery were here, he would say that the Rish Outcast is produced under a Creative Commons attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives license, which means share it, spread it around, baby, copy it if you want, but you can't change the file, you can't take credit for it, and of course you can't charge for it. I will be back soon, I hope, and that would mean, if I'm back soon, that I got up and brushed myself off and faced another day. And I'm weak. So if I can do it, you can do it too. Hey guys, just one more little thing here at the end of the episode. I'm going to try and do this more regularly. It's self-serving, but it sort of needs to be done. I am putting out collections of my audio fiction. And I'd been planning on doing it for a long time. Long story short, I'd been told years ago that people are really hesitant to spend an Audible credit on a short story or a, you know, novella or whatever, when you can get a full novel for an Audible credit. It doesn't make sense to buy, you know, a short story or a novella or, you know, even a trio of short stories. So I'd been planning on putting out collections of my stories that were long, you know, not long, but long, that were hours long, so that people might feel a little bit more comfortable spending those Audible credits. And the first one is out. And I'm calling the first collection The Calling and Other Stories, The Audio Fiction of Rish Outfield. And it's been interesting trying to decide what should go into the collection and what shouldn't. And I decided to call the first one The Calling just because that story is, for me, fairly well known. You know, I won that Broken Mirror contest and we did it on the show, and it was the very first thing, I believe, that I put out for sale. Maybe it wasn't, but first thing I can remember. And I went out and I recorded a new version of it with, you know, the new ending and a couple of other little tiny revisions. And so I figured, okay, let's call the collection that. Sunny C, listener of the Doonstief and friend of the show, suggested that I do a collection called Greetings from the Ninth Sector, you know, and other stories by Rish Outfield or whatever. And that was a really good idea. So that might be the second collection. Not sure, though. Years ago, I thought it would be really fun to put out an entire collection of my writings for contests. And I could either call it Uncontested or No Contest. And you'd include all sorts of stuff that I'd written for writing contests over the years. You know, I've got a few stories like Halloween Night, Lemon Pledge. Oh, the one that Norm Sherman narrated for us on the Doonstief back when it was new, that I believe Big called Naughty or Nice. Those were all written for a horror website that would do contests every quarter or something like that, and good stuff. I did a story. The only one that ever won any of those contests, and it won second place, was, gosh, I can't remember what it was called. I wrote a story called Grandpa's Prize that I don't think is available anywhere. I even did episode art for it. Ooh, I'm a sick person, guys. But I did a prequel, to Grandpa's Prize that won second place in one of those contests. Why am I talking? Oh, because you're still here. So I did those. You know, there's various Doonstief contests, you know, the Broken Mirror stuff. I just realized if The Calling was the title of the first collection and the second one is all about stories written for contests, then The Calling should be in that one too. Darn. Okay, well, I will think about this. Maybe what I'll do is make a text collection called No Contest that is just stories for contests. And I would include Greetings from the 10th album is me combining my story with Big's story, the 10th album. Dumb. Sorry. Greetings from the Ninth Sector and The Calling. I did a bunch for the Horror Addicts podcast, White House Tour, Friends in Paradise, the Scottish Scene. Scottish Scene is, I think, my favorite of all those. And I put those in a collection of contest stories. I wrote a story for Marshall Latham's podcast called The Gold Bug that maybe I could include. I wrote one for his most recent contest that just ended up being super, super long, so I never submitted it to him. But maybe I'd enter that. Last Contact was written for a contest, but I don't think I would count that. Yeah, I started to write another short story for Marshall's podcast called Annabelle Lee, but yeah, I don't think I ever finished that one. Maybe I will someday, I don't know. Wasn't a great idea, but I want to support Marshall. See, the problem with the No Contest collection is a lot of these stories did not win or even place, which probably means they weren't very good. So why would I want to release bad stories? It's hard to say, huh? Anyhow, kids, all of that is really something I should cut out. The point I really should make is that there's a collection out right now called The Calling and Other Stories. Big and I had this conversation years ago about what do we do with bad stories. And he said, well, maybe if you put out a collection with a lot of like good stories, you could throw in one or two of these bad stories and say, that's the only place you'll ever get it because I'm never going to release that by itself. There's a writer out there that gives a lot of advice, and one of his bits of advice is, you know, anytime that you finish something, you send it out, whether you're sending it out to a contest or a magazine, or now, in the 21st century, just self-publishing. Because if you don't, then it goes to waste. And that's probably true, except for all the many, 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 many stories that I've written. And I'm glad I wrote. I feel like each one either expressed something that I was feeling and needed to say, or helped me with my craft to become a better storyteller, or made me smile or laugh or be afraid, or made somebody else feel that way. So that's something to think about. There are a lot of stories that I've written that I'm never going to put out there on their own. You know what I mean? But it seems like you could put them out there in collections. At least that's what Big thought. I don't know. I was also thinking of like all the flash fiction that I've written over the years. For a while there, before we started the Doonstief, and while the Doonstief was new, I would write drabbles and send them to the Drabblecast. And I'd say 5-6 of my drabbles got run on the Drabblecast. And you can't really release those as their own thing. Although I guess on Smashwords I could for free. But to do audio versions of them and include them as like little bonus tracks, like on a CD, that would be cool. This is a really, really bad sell, guys. I'm kind of tempted to just stop this recording and do it all again. You know, it's the problem with driving, concentrating on driving. I'm going under the speed limit, whoops. But I also want to concentrate on what I'm saying to you, and I also really have to go to the bathroom, so I'm concentrating on that not happening. So it's difficult. I guess what I was saying is that I've included a few of these little tiny stories in there as bonuses, and it's the only place that you'll be able to get those to make like an incentive for people to buy the collections rather than just buying the individual stories. And here's the thing, if you buy the individual stories, you're going to end up spending more money. That doesn't help anybody but me and Audible and Amazon, two of which are greedy bastards. So I'm going to put a link to that collection in what we call the show notes, and I would appreciate it if you'd go out there and buy it. If sales are good, it will encourage me to put out the second volume sooner rather than later. Because at this point, I'm thinking, well, maybe one volume a year. And that will, one volume a year would probably get me till I'm about 70. Sorry. I really enjoy writing, guys. And I'm not great at it, but there are times that I feel like I'm good at it, and I wanted to share that with you if you're a fan of my writing. Because, listen, if you're listening to this, you're either a fan of my writing or you're a fan of my voice, my narration, my personality. I can't think of a... Well, maybe you hate me and are looking for blackmail material, in which case I'm trying hard not to pee myself while on the freeway, going 9 miles under the speed limit. But I like to hear that people like my stuff, and I'm trying to make more and more and more stuff available. One day I'm going to look while I have this thing running and tell you how many items of mine are available on Amazon or on Audible. And maybe I'll just like go down the list and say, okay, so that one's going to be in a collection. That one's going to be on the Rish Outcast. That one, I think I'm going to remove that one. That's a bad story. You know, that sort of thing. I enjoy writing and I enjoy narrating. The only thing I don't enjoy about all that, well, you already know what I'm going to say. I don't like editing, although I don't hate it. And I don't like uploading the files, and that I do hate. But having the Rish Outcast has actually helped me put out more stuff for sale. Because I record it, right? And I edit it. If it's there, why not put it up and see if I can't make $3 or $4 on it, which sadly is about what I make. And then, you know, a couple months down the line, I will put it in a Rish Outcast and everybody else will get to listen to it. While it's still there, it's still up on Audible, so people that don't listen to my show can buy it. That's cool. Whoops, I just passed my exit. Don't get old, kids, if you can help it. Good night.
This is for you, Big Anklevich, who loved this song. Well, the men come in these places, and those men are all the same. You don't look at their faces, and you don't ask their names. You don't think of them as human. You don't think of them at all. You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. I'll do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money, and any old music will do. I wanna make $1 million. I want to live out by the sea, have a husband and some children. Yes, I guess I want a family. All the men come in these places, and the men are all the same. You don't look at their faces, and you don't ask their names. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. I'll do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money, and any old music will do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. I'll do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money, and any old music will do. Yes, Biggie, you know all too well what the song's about. Deutschmarks or dollars, American Express will do nicely, thank you. Let me loosen up your collar. Tell me, do you want to see the shimmy again? I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. I'll do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money, and any old music will do. Happy birthday, Big Anklevich.
Actually, Fake Sean, he despises that song.
What's that?
It was a joke.
Oh, son of a